Welcome, everyone, to the Over the Cap podcast for March 5th, 2017. I'm your host, Jason Fitzgerald. You can catch me at Twitter, at Jason_OTC, or you can find me online, overthecap.com, or Jason at overthecap.com. This is free agency week, so this is always a big week for us at OTC. Hopefully, we can handle the traffic. I mentioned to you the other week, we did upgrade our servers again, so hopefully we can hold up to the burst in traffic, but I know sometimes that is not the case, so just bear with us for the first couple of days of free agency. It usually sorts itself out by, I would say, the third day of free agency. It usually clears up. This is a big week. It's an exciting time for a lot of players. Can be disappointing for others. I don't feel a lot of buzz with this year's free agent group. There's a couple positions, I think, that are pretty good. I think cornerback is pretty decent. I think the wide receiver group is pretty decent as well, but it's not like that kind of blow you away mentality that sometimes we see. A couple of years ago, I think it was 2015's group, and even 2014 as well, they were really, really good free agent groups. You had a couple of guys that made it that were kind of unexpected, I think, to get there. The last 2 years, it really hasn't been that way. I'm assuming that for this year. Last year's, I thought, was kind of quiet compared to the ones in the past. You did have the big deals for Vernon and those guys coming in, but I don't think anyone really looked at them as your top line kind of premier free agents. And this year, I just don't see that either. I don't see those big names that are really going to be out there that are really going to be signing, kind of the record-setting deals. I mean, maybe something will happen in there that'll change that up a little. So I guess we'll see. So we'll do a lot of questions again today with everyone. I mentioned the Craft Beer Festival last week. Unfortunately, was unable to attend. I kind of got sick the other day, and that kind of knocked me out of commission. So unfortunately, I didn't get to go. So I think there's another one of those coming up. I think my wife said at the Sussex Fairgrounds in about a month, so hopefully that one will work out better, and I will be healthy enough to attend. So hopefully that works out better next time around. We're going to, probably by the time you're listening to this, you'll notice there's a couple of changes on OTC. In the event that I have this up beforehand, I won't really talk about them too much right now. We'll talk about them a little more in depth, I guess, next week when I do the podcast. But what you will see, just to give you an idea, you'll see some changes on the front page that hopefully will make some things a little bit easier to navigate, just to draw a little bit more attention to some of the things that really are the more popular features on OTC. And there's going to be some new sections on there that are pretty interesting. I think if you're really into this stuff, and we'll talk about it next week and you can check them out. Without further ado, I guess let's get into, into everyone's, kind of everyone's questions. But I think the first thing I really want to talk about here is the concept of rebuilding. And this is really something as it pertains to the Jets, 49ers, the Browns, a couple of those teams. So the Jets this week, they finalized that they're going to be releasing Darrell Revis and they're going to be releasing Brandon Marshall. They did actually release Brandon Marshall. As I mentioned last week on the podcast, as a procedural move, just because of the rules of the CBA, the Jets actually cannot release Revis until March 9th. It's just the way that the things are set up with his guaranteed money. So he won't actually be released until then. We've processed it on the site that he's released because, let's be realistic, they're operating under the assumption that they're going to have that cap room. The expectation is that other players are going to be cut. I've talked about that all year. I can't see the purpose of having Eric Decker back. Their other corner I don't really see back. Gilchrist at safety. They're just not – they don't play well enough, I think, to justify necessarily the investment there. But the other thing that comes up is, and I saw this in a lot of places, is the Jets were releasing some of these players. The Jets are embracing this rebuild. They're embracing the concept of rebuilding. Now, whenever anyone hears the word rebuilding, when they hear that phrase, I think what they really think about is what was the John Idzik concept of rebuilding, which is you don't go out and bring in any veterans whatsoever. You are just going to field a team of basically draft picks, younger players, and that's your rebuild. And I don't think rebuilding has to be that way. There are ways to where you can be at least fielding a product without really damaging yourself long term. You can field a product that at least can be somewhat competitive while you do this rebuild with youth, versus just completely tearing it down and going out there with a roster sometimes that just really doesn't leave much up to the imagination. Now, the Jets supposedly, I believe it was supposedly, told one of the reporters off the record or had a source that said that the Jets front office now, their expectation is they won't field a competitive team. By competitive meaning, they won't compete for the playoffs for at least two more years. And in the NFL, that is really hard to fathom. Teams can change things around very quickly in the NFL. Now, you can say you won't be a Super Bowl competitor for 3 years. You can say a lot of things, but you shouldn't say that you're not going to be competitive for 3 years, because it doesn't take much to really turn things around. If you hit on the right player, which honestly is going to be the right quarterback, usually it just takes you 1 year. By the second year of that quarterback being in your system, you should be able to field a team at that point in time that competes for the playoffs. Again, it might not be great, but it's a team that should be competitive for the playoffs. If you get the right mix around a young quarterback, go back to the days of Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco as rookies. They were put in a system that was reasonable for a rookie to play in, didn't rely on them to do too much, and had decent players around them to where they actually made the playoffs as rookies. When I look back, I actually think the way those two players were handled as rookies were probably the kind of the ideal for the way that things should go when you have a young quarterback. I think that was perfectly handled by those two organizations. But again, the point I really want to get to is, when we rebuild, why do we have to say that the team can't even attempt to be competitive? Now, you see, this is where I think there's a disconnect, because, and I'll talk about the Jets here mainly, because the Jets to me are the example that I know best, and they're the one that's really tearing it down versus the other teams, which are kind of torn down to some extent already. Year by year, you do have to spend a certain amount of money. So this year, the salary cap is going to be $167 million. So you have to spend about 90% of that. Now, each year, that's what your spending is. So what you don't necessarily want to do is be so far under that it puts you in a position to where you have to overpay later on to be compliant, because that can be difficult for some teams. Because if you don't have rookies in the pipeline now, you have 4 years to spend this money. So in the next 4 years, if you don't have players who are coming up for extensions, it means really to meet those obligations, you're going to have to go out there and overspend in free agency anyway. Just based on the timeline of that. Right now, a team like the Jets, a team like the Browns, a team like the 49ers, they don't have anybody in the pipeline that you would look at and say, you know what? Wow, that guy's worth a $17 million a year contract, or, you know, years from now, that's going to be $20 million, $24 million, $23 million, whatever those numbers are going to be. You don't have anyone in the pipeline that's going to command that money. So what are you going to do? Are you going to have to then go into free agency 2 years from now and go crazy? It's a possibility. So because of the way that that's written, teams really should think about spending a little bit during these quote-unquote rebuilding phases. That's number one. Number two, what you don't need to do is you don't need to go out there and get your top line free agents right now. Yeah, the guys where I mentioned the Vernon before. You don't get a guy who's going to have 3 years of guarantees at $54 million, $50 million, $52 million. And you're going to have to give them big signing bonuses and everything else. But what you can do is you can go into that group of second tier free agents. You might have to overpay a little bit for them, but you can go into that second tier and you can put some pieces together that at least give your team, one, some veteran leadership, two, some proven commodities to put on the field, and number three, can actually give the fan base some kind of hope for what you're doing, to show you something. And the team that really envisions that I think embodies doing that perfectly is the Oakland Raiders. Now, the Oakland Raiders hit big on a certain player, and that's really what changed their fortunes around. But the fact was, Oakland was willing to go out there, and Oakland was willing to spend on certain players because really for two reasons. One, the roster was devoid of talent, much like the Jets, 49ers, and Browns. There was no talent on the team whatsoever. They had to spend money somewhere, so they needed to go into free agency and bring guys in. And they were hoping to at least put a product on the field that in September wasn't going to be out of the race. You just want to have a team that in December is not eliminated until, say, the second week of December, third week of December, that there is in some way, shape, or form a realistic, legitimate fighting chance. Now, what Oakland did that I think was very good with their contracts is they structured their contracts in a way to where there's no signing bonus money. They're not the highest of paid players, but there's no signing bonus money in the deals. So all of the contracts are nothing more than two-year deals. In a sense, what the Jets did 2 years ago was attempting to duplicate what the Oakland Raiders did. The difference is that the Jets continued to draft like garbage in the 2 years that they did that. Now, one of the differences that I would say with the Jets' approach versus Oakland's approach was the Jets went a little too heavy with the name veterans. Now, that doesn't mean that they screwed over their salary cap or anything like that, but the Jets did some things to raise expectation levels because of the type of players they brought in. Instead of going one notch below, going for a Darrell Revis, for example, that's probably stretching too far. Paying the kind of money they did for Ryan Fitzpatrick last year, that's probably stretching too far. Changing their plans around doing the Wilkerson contract that they did, and I know that wasn't a free agent signing, that's stretching it too far. The Jets probably went a little too far in the other direction. Jacksonville, who also kind of followed a similar model as Oakland, but then kind of got off track because I don't know if that team knows what they're doing. They kind of had the right idea, though, for a period as well. Where Jacksonville fell apart was Jacksonville just started to sign guys for the sake of signing them. When you look at some of the players that they were bringing in, not only were they poor players that were being overvalued, but they were players that didn't necessarily fit. You know, you get a 3-4 guy and you're trying to fit him in a 4-3. You're getting 8 million defensive ends. You know, oh, we'll play this guy at defensive tackle. Maybe that one can go here. That one can go there. They just kind of box themselves in. And then when their quarterback doesn't hit, well, they were screwed. So Oakland got it right. Now, Oakland was made much better by the selection of the quarterback. Now, and you can argue about some of the other players they have as well. Mack is obviously terrific. Gabe Jackson, those guys are great as well. The difference there, though, is those aren't game changers. When one guy falls off the team, which was Carr, that's a bad team. But the fact is, if the Raiders had just gone into this complete tank mode that a lot of people are assuming these other teams should be in, the Raiders would not have made the playoffs this year. Whatever you want to say about Carr and how good Carr is, if Carr was out there with nothing but draft picks, undrafteds, and a couple of guys that the Raiders had brought in this past offseason, the Raiders would not have made the playoffs. I think that's a guarantee. They needed the Michael Crabtrees in there. They needed some of those other guys on that team to be competitive, because even if guys are bad, and we can look at someone like a Sean Smith and say, you know, he probably didn't have a great year last year. You know, that's a bit of a disappointing signing, in fact. You might even be able to say that. But he at least gave you something credible. There's no guarantee that you are going to be able to replace that in the draft or, you know, via the undrafted process. You probably wouldn't have been able to. It probably would have been worse. So you look at what they did, and I think they did that right. And that's what I would advise teams like the Jets and the 49ers and those guys to do. Don't just say we're rebuilding. This isn't baseball. It's not a sport where you can just tear things down, in part because of the money involved. And you can say we've got this big picture to look at. I just don't think that works so much in football. There's a different passion that comes with football, I think, because football, being a 16-game season, being, for the most part, a one-day-a-week event. Unlike the other sports just kind of happened to be there. You know, I'm a Mets fan. The Mets were awful for years. Awful. And you can say, well, the Mets went through a rebuild. The Mets went through a rebuild, and nobody cared about them. Nobody cared about the Mets. People wanted the owners to go. They wanted the owners to leave the team. They wanted them to sell the team because they said the Mets were not going to get any better while these guys were there penny-pinching their way through this quote-unquote rebuild. So, yeah, it happened. But part of the reason why there's not banners flying over Shea or Citi Field, you don't have the banners flying over the way that there were for the Jets' last general manager, was just the fact that, you know, by August, a lot of people don't care anyway. If your team was never in it in the first place, it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. And it's a daily sport. Same thing I think even happens with basketball. There's a tolerance to an expectation point. The Knicks are a perfect example, I think, of that. The Knicks were, I think the fan base was relatively tolerant of what was called a salary cap dump. Of certain players where they made moves, whether it was getting rid of the Tyson Chandlers and guys like that, who are nice little pieces, but not on a bad team. So you trade those guys off, and your expectation in basketball, because the drafting there sometimes is it's a lot of luck based on what years you hit, and the Knicks had traded away a lot of draft picks as well. But the purpose of that was they were going to clear out all this cap space, and they were going to make a run at LeBron James, and they were going to make a run at Chris Paul, and they were going to make a run at all these guys. And it never materialized. You know, the 1 year they brought in Stoudemire, and then they end up making the trade for Carmelo after, you know, James and everyone else decides to not go to New York. And then Phil Jackson comes in, and the same kind of thing. What do they get? Joakim Noah? I think that's kind of what happens when you tear things down. So the Knicks, you know, that's an example of a team that tore things down. It doesn't work out. And now they're left spending money anyway on, you know, some questionable players, Rose, Noah, you know, kind of reclamation projects, and it still doesn't work out. And I don't think it's anything different in football. Again, in basketball, out of sight, out of mind. It just kind of, it gets to you at the point, and, you know, February, March rolls along, and you just say, it is what it is. And in football, it's not that way, just because it's of the way that daily grind is, I think, with everyone. And I don't want to be in the position, if I'm running the team, to be in the position that Maccagnan was in when he first took over the job of the Jets, which was, okay, I have a roster with no talent because this last rebuild didn't work. I've got all this money I have to spend. It's not like he could just, you know, lock it in a box and sit on it. Did they have to spend as much as they did? No, they probably could have gone one less player, two less players at the most, but they had to spend it somewhere. You know, maybe they would have been able to spend a little more this past season and a little less the year before, but they still had to spend it because after the two-year period with Idzik, they were way under where they needed to be with the spending, way under. So the Jets had to go out there and spend the money. Why would you want to be in that position? Again, the reason for the Jets' failure is not the fact that the players that they had that were veterans weren't good this year. That's not why the team is failing. The reason the team is failing is the young players that were supposed to be developing while these veterans were, you know, kind of giving it that last hurrah and showing these guys the ropes, is the fact that these young guys they brought in suck. They're not any good. The Jets, 2 years, two second-round draft picks, nothing out of those players. So you don't want to go into a season, I think, and just say, give that impression, we're going to tank it because we're just going to avoid anything and everything in free agency because we're embracing young. It's not the way it has to be, and it's not the way it should be. You can embrace it, go 2 years with some other guys filling in gaps, and then you draft players. You'd never want to sign anyone to where that impairs your ability to draft somebody. And please, please, New York Jets, any of these other teams too, but especially Jets, if you are going to draft players, when you draft players, draft them at impact positions. Please, no more of this nonsense. When you have a team like this that is utter garbage, when you're that bad, please do not go in there and draft a safety in the first round like you did a couple years ago with Calvin Pryor. a guy who's going to be a strong safety. I mean, come on. And those are the things that drive you crazy. You look at a team like the Jets, you go out there, you draft an inside linebacker? You draft another defensive end when you've already got two high-quality starting guys? You got to think about these things. I don't care when you look on a board and you see best available player, because that best available player is probably not going to be the biggest difference maker for your organization. Leonard Williams may very well be better than Vic Beasley. How would the Jets have been better? Would the Jets be better with Beasley? Would the Jets be better with Williams? It's not even a question. The Jets would be a better team with Victor Beasley playing the outside linebacker position and Leonard Williams being somewhere else, where the Jets had Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson, who were already under contract to the team, playing at those defensive end positions. Absolutely 100% would have been better off. Doesn't matter if Williams is going to be a better player. The better fit for your team was to go with the pass rushing outside linebacker. All those things need to be taken into account. And I know that's off the topic of rebuilding, but it's a little something that goes into that that is definitely missed out, I think, by too many teams that get way too hung up on this concept of best available player. You just can't do it sometimes. There are players who make a difference. There's players who fill a role. You know, Calvin Pryor, if you're a playoff team, all well and good. Go draft Calvin Pryor in the first round. You're an awful 4-win, 5-win, 6-win team, whatever the Jets were. The Jets may have even won 8 games that year, but that was a bad team. You looked at that roster, it was a terrible team. You don't draft a strong safety in the first round. You just don't do it. Okay? So, you know, I know that's a bit off topic there. But I just want to just to talk about this rebuilding, because far too often rebuilding is just, it's just looked at as giving up and saying, I can't do this, I'm just going to draft. Well, you know what? You look at what you've done drafting so far, would you have any confidence you're going to be any better? No. So, yeah, it's just a way you approach things, and there's no reason that those teams should not be involved with the second tier of free agency. First tier of free agency, I agree. They should not be involved in that whatsoever. But this year, those teams should be involved in trying to, you know, do some things. So I just want to keep bring that up. One of the things I'll talk about a little bit here, and then I'll get to everyone's questions. I just wanted to mention Reality Sports Online. They are, as you know, I think most of the listeners of this podcast know, we did a league with them last year. We're going to do that again this year. I got to just talk with them about getting that league up and running again. And you'll see there's a couple ads on the site that you can click on if you want to go there. If you're not familiar with Reality Sports Online, they basically are a full salary cap league. It's a year-long league. You actually go, and the most fun thing about the league, in my mind, is you go in there and you have a draft room. And in that draft room, you are bidding on players. You're signing them to contracts. It's real fast. You sign them to contracts. You build your team for now. You build your team for the future. You get to keep your players. You're working within a salary cap. So it's not like a daily league where, you know, on Sunday you're picking all these different teams. This is your team you're going to be with for the next couple of years. It's a really good product. So I would check them out, realitysportsonline.com. When you sign up to register, I think they give you a 14-day free trial right now. Teams, I think, are $10. I think it's $9.99 per team. But you can check them out when you sign up. If you you look at the little drop-down menu and the How Did You Hear From Us, you click on Over the Cap, and I think they give you a little bit of a discount, I think, when you sign up via the site, via the podcast, or anything else. So give them a check. So anyway, let's get into questions. So we'll go to Twitter questions first, then I'll move on to the email questions. I haven't really read any of these over, so wouldn't be surprised if some of them could be a little difficult to answer. So let's see. We'll start with Twitter. Chris, we got two questions from Chris here. Still wonder who pays Chip Kelly's salary this year, the Eagles or the 49ers. I honestly have no idea as to what the status of that contract was and the way the offsets were and everything else. That's not information that usually gets out whatsoever. The 49ers are definitely paying his salary. I would imagine that for certain. Do the Eagles still owe him money? I guess that's possible. It depends on if he had offsets in the contract or not. I know Kyle Shanahan, when he signed, someone went out of their way to say that Kyle Shanahan's contract had basically no offset clause in there. So he would collect from the 49ers if they fired him, and he could go and head coach with another team. I understand the concept of that since the 49ers organization has been so unstable. I can see where he was coming from with wanting that. So that leads me to think that they did not give Chip Kelly that same deal that was in there. So I would guess if he got a job, the 49ers would be off the hook. And I'm going to guess that means the Eagles didn't do the same. So my guess is the 49ers deal, that supersedes the Eagles one. So the 49ers probably have to pay him. And I would guess the Eagles pay any balance after that. But I really don't know. My guess is he might be collecting from two teams in some way, shape, or form. But definitely the 49ers are still paying him. What is Benny Logan's salary expectation? Can and should the Eagles re-sign him? I think it depends on how much money he's looking for. I think Logan is actually hurt a little bit by some of the other players being available. Poe is going to be available. That's a higher level player. I think there's two ways that can help or it can hurt. It can help you in the fact that if it's a position where there's a lot of interest, I don't think defensive tackle happens to be one of those positions, but if it's a position where there is a lot of interest, and let's say there's three or four teams bidding for Poe and some other defensive tackle or whatnot, your price goes up just even if you are the leftover guy. A lot of times your price goes up. I talked about that on a interview I did this week. I think Greg Jennings was the example I used. Greg Jennings was not in a position where he should have been a top-level pay receiver or even close to it. And he came out in a year where there was just a couple of receivers, and Jennings was like the third or fourth or fifth guy. But when no one else signed with Minnesota, well, Minnesota was in a position where they still needed to bring someone in, so I think they signed him for like $9 million, which at the time was pretty good money for a wide receiver. And, they kind of got left, left with the runner up, the third runner up in the search for receiver. I think Mike Wallace was probably the guy that they wanted that year. So I could see that situation potentially occurring here, which will raise his price. I would imagine his salary expectation is probably in the $11 million range per year. That would be along the lines of like what Smith got in Dallas and a couple of these other guys got. The guy with the Rams, Brockers, I think, signed a deal that was like that. So I would imagine that's going to be his expectation. I look at his production, and granted, I don't watch the Eagles every week. I watch a couple games here and there. I look at his just statistical production, where he ranks. I don't see him ranking in with those players. Now, maybe in some cases, where you look at some of those deals and say, Crawford kind of, they gave him a deal that was a little excessive, so the Eagles should do the same. That's possible. The Rams clearly did that with their guy. So I can see that logic, but when I see where other players have gone in there, I would think $8 million is kind of where he should end up. I think you can make an argument that he should end up even lower than that. My guess is if he's $8 million or lower, the Eagles keep him. If he's higher than that, I think they'll let him walk, and I think they probably should let him walk. They have other concerns. They have so much money invested in Cox right now. I don't think you can go with another guy. After you spend all that money on like Vinnie Curry, which was not a good signing, I don't think that they can sink more into that. Now the Eagles, there's a lot of moves that they're rumored to be making with trades and everything else, but I think that they have to be fiscally conservative when it comes to another defensive lineman right now. They have too many needs, I think, on offense to improve that team to where they should be focusing on that and making things easier for Wentz than keeping a guy like Logan if he's going to be too expensive. Sergio, if the Broncos were to acquire Tony Romo, what would be a reasonable contract that you could see both sides agreeing to? I don't know. I would think that the logic would dictate that Romo would aim for the the Peyton Manning deal with them. You see, there's a couple ways you can look at that. One is that if there is no interest in Romo, then I think the Broncos would basically say, look, Manning was willing to play for $14 million, and we gave him incentives if he made the championship game. We gave him incentives if he made the Super Bowl or won those games. I'm sorry. I think it was winning those games, not just getting to them. And that would max him out at 18. And I think they would say something along the lines of, well, you know, Manning was willing to bring his salary down from this. You were going to play with Dallas this year for $14 million. So how about we do this? How about we do $10 million base? We'll do $2 million if you win the championship game, $2 million if you win the Super Bowl. That can get you back to your 14, and away we go. I kind of think that would be the logic. Now, if he's a free agent and he does get a lot of interest, if he's out there and he is getting interest from the Washington Redskins, and that was a crazy trade rumor, but if he's interested in the Redskins and the Texans and all these players are there, well, then the money can get higher. But I think that legitimately, I think that's a fair number for Romo, is probably in that realm. Guy hasn't played football in 2 years. I don't think you can invest huge money in him. I think I would be afraid to go more than $15 million for 1 year for Romo, because I'd be afraid that 1 year is only going to be two or three games. You know, and it definitely would not be, and he would not be healthy for the playoffs. That would be my other worry. So I think that would be reasonable for Denver. But I definitely think Denver is, if Denver was to look to get Romo, I think that Denver would definitely look to bring his salary down from $14 million and incentivize it, because they like to do incentives. They like to do that stuff. And I think that would help them really make that case to other players. Now, you can make an argument that you can't be the quarterback of the team and not be the highest paid player. And in that respect, I think Demaryius Thomas and, certainly Miller was going to be over. But I can't imagine that Denver is going to sign a quarterback for $20 million. That would be very stunning to me, to beat the Von Miller deal. Now, just on that trade rumor of Kirk Cousins goes from Washington to San Francisco. That makes sense. Washington keeping Cousins on the franchise tag another year makes no sense at all. Cousins going to San Francisco for, you know, the number two overall draft pick and probably another pick. That to me makes sense. I see that. Tony Romo being traded from Dallas to Washington, I don't see that at all. Now, I did make mention that one of the reasons Dallas would hold on to Romo was to trade him basically out of division to, I could see Dallas floating a rumor like that to get the Texans or the Broncos, you know, on the phone to say, hey, what's it going to cost us to get Romo? But I would think the Redskins would have to give up a lot for Dallas to be willing to trade there. So I don't know if I see that one. It seems odd to me. Thomas asks, who will be the first free agent to sign? You know, if he makes free agency, I'm thinking Jeffrey will be the first to sign. But I don't know, maybe the Bears will make a run at him at the last second. I don't know if I really agree with the Bears doing that. I think that's a mistake. But I could see him. I think Poe's got too many question marks. I don't think he'll be the first. I think Jeffrey will be the first. I think he's the first domino probably to fall. If not him, Gilmore from the Bills, maybe he'll be the first to go. I would think it's that. I didn't really hear a lot of rumors coming out of the combine. I'm sure there's some, and I'm sure some of it was the fact that I wasn't feeling well, so I didn't really pay much attention to it. But I didn't hear a lot of stuff coming out of there, which I think was just a reminder of this is a little bit of a lackluster group of free agents. So let's see. CS, what happens in the running back market with Bell's cap number this year, the tag, and if they tag him next year? The only thing that'll impact, it'll impact both tags, because he'll have the highest cap figure for the year, so that'll raise the percentage for that. It'll also raise the number on the exclusive tag a little bit. I'm sorry, it won't raise the exclusive tag. That won't happen. It'll just raise the average a little bit. It's really not going to have anything reasonable that would really impact it one way or the other. Sounds like they're going to get a long-term deal done, so I think it'll probably be a moot point, and they'll bring his cap number way down this year. Oscar, what value of the Jets' number one pick trade down with Minnesota at 16, when Minnesota's first and third and next year's one or two be worth it? I don't think Minnesota would give up that much. You know, Minnesota's given up a lot. Does Minnesota have a first-round pick this year? I don't even know if they do. Hold on. Let me see if they do. I don't remember. They traded the first-round pick away for Bradford. But I could be mistaken on that. I could be mistaken. I get mixed up with all the trading that went on last year with teams coming in and out. I could be mistaken on that. No, they don't have a first-round pick this year. So, you know, I'm not sure. I think maybe he was mixed up with the things. Or did Minnesota make another trade? I don't know. I don't think the Vikings are picking in the first round this year, unless I missed something, which is possible. You know, I don't know where the Jets would trade down to in this draft. It depends on what you're looking for and what you're looking to do. You know, to get down for number six, my guess is you would get a mid-round one and maybe a number two. I think would probably, you know, mid-round one, mid-round two, I guess would probably do it. I'm not sure otherwise what that would be. Oh, maybe he was asking, would Minnesota's second and fourth round picks and next year's number one be worth it? I don't think Minnesota's very good. I would probably do that move. It won't help you this year, but I could see the logic in doing that. Thoughts on a contract for Kenny Stills, Jarvis Landry, and Rashad Jones? I don't know. I still think the Kenny Stills at $12 million is insane. But people go crazy for wide receivers. So could very well be that much. Logically, looking at his numbers, there's no reason he should be above 8. You know, 8.5, maybe 9 at the most. But people do crazy things for receivers. Landry's a pretty good player. He should be in that $12 million range, I would think. I'd be surprised if he was under that. I don't know much about Jones. I haven't really looked close enough, so I'm not sure what the extension cost on that would be. Let's see, here's a question. Jeff, any test you'd like to see the players participate in that currently isn't an option in general or for a specific positional group? I guess that's related to the combine. Not really my cup of tea, so unfortunately I can't really say. I think one of the things with the combine, when you watch a lot of those, and I know it's about you know, different measurables and stuff like that. One of the things is I don't think it really tests anyone in any kind of functional football environment. I think a much better use of the combine is going to be as virtual reality improves. And you can, you know, throw a quarterback under center in a play. You can throw a wide receiver out there somehow running a route. You can do certain things, I think, in a VR environment that can somehow be a better way to test people without obviously them getting hurt, to really get an idea of how some of this translates to a game. You know, 40 time is all well and good, and there's certain things that are great for that. But I don't think that's really going to tell you much. You know, the combine is really what it should be there for, is to reinforce just some of your thoughts about the athletic ability of a player. It's amazing to me when people see certain guys test and, you know, they're just like, wow, you know, that really made him jump up the board. It shouldn't. All it should do is just solidify a place on the board, maybe give you a second to think twice, to say, let me go back and look at some of that tape and see, you know, if he's not as fast as I thought, you know, were some of the results a byproduct of the competition, maybe a little more than I thought. That's what I would lean towards. Luke, what will Adrian Peterson's market be? Will someone take a chance on his potential? Someone will take a chance on him. I don't know about potential. You know, I think the veteran market's pretty much capped at like $5 million, maybe four. I thought Steven Jackson was at five, but someone the other day mentioned four. So I could have been off on what Steven Jackson signed for. But to me, that's his market, $4 to $5 million at that market. I think there's a couple teams that would be interested. I think there's only a handful of teams that would really give him kind of like a starting spot. I think most teams would look to pair him with somebody else. people give him incentives if he hits certain thresholds, but I don't see anyone looking at him at being big potential. He was, he tailed off at the end 2 years ago, and he was not impressive last year in a little bit that he was on the field when he wasn't hurt. He's missed two of the last 3 years, basically. I don't think that, anyone is going to pay him $6-7 million to come to the team. I think it's going to be more of, just those numbers kind of embarrassing is not the word, but not insulting him with an offer. And I think he'll end up going there. Let's see. Thoughts on the Eric Berry and the Tardif contract extensions. I haven't really looked at either of those that closely. Berry's deal is pretty monstrous. I did look at those numbers a little bit closer. It's a massive contract for safety. The Chiefs, I have an article on the site if you haven't read it, talks about like the negatives of using the franchise tag. The franchise tag is great when you're using it for leverage to hammer out a deal. When the player kind of calls your bluff on that, plays the year out and doesn't implode or doesn't get injured, the player gains a lot because the salary in the second year on that franchise tag is so high that they've basically got whatever they would have gotten on the long-term deals before. So it pays for them to, to go one more time back into free agency and just play the year out on the tag, which teams don't want because they want the leverage of the long-term deal. So his contract, it pays him a $20 million signing bonus. So it's a huge figure up front, huge. He's going to make about $21 million this year. His 3 year is 42 and change, I think. So that's a big number. If you look at the breakdown of the deal, let me see if I have his cap numbers written down. Hold on 1 second. But if you look at the breakdown, the Chiefs need him to get to the fourth year of this contract for the contract to work for them. If he can't get to that deal, if he can't get to that year, if they have to cut him after the third year, this was a major, major, major flop by them. So they need him to get to the fourth year of the deal and to be effective in that fourth year. Let's see. Berry. All right, so he'll have a $5 million cap number this year. 16.5, and I know this is a couple years out. 16.5 is a high number for a safety. 13.5 in 2020. $30 million over 2 years. That's huge. I sound like Donald Trump with all the huges here. 42.5 over three, I believe, is where he's at. And then the fourth year, he'll make under $10 million for that year. So that's a little bit more of a realistic total, at least there. So they need him to get to 4, maybe 5 years even to really justify this use. The franchise tag blew up on him. This is a team that uses the franchise tag a lot. Some cases it's helped, some cases it's hurt them. In this case, it clearly hurt. I mean, they could have done a better deal than this if they just would have sucked it up and taken the deal last year that he was looking for. I was stunned by this contract. It's big, and it's no question about it. This is a legitimate game changer at the position. The Cardinals contract with Matthew, you could look at that a number of different ways, and you could justify saying, it's kind of a cornerback thing. I would never look at it that way because he's not playing a prime cornerback position. But I can at least see the logic in saying, well, saves us from spending on more money on a slot corner where we can get a cheaper safety while he goes and covers at the line. A couple different ways that you could look at that. This is a legitimate safety contract. This should jump the prices up for safeties in the future. I think that it's a very good deal for him, much more so than for Kansas City. The guards contract, it is what it is. I mean, they gave him, I think it's $8 million a year extension, eight and change. That's just where the market is right now for guards. There's nothing crazy about the deal. There's nothing excessive about it. It's a pretty straightforward contract. And the offensive line, it just kind of is where it is when it comes to those players. You're not going to get great deals. Everyone's kind of in the same position. That's just guards, your left tackles, right tackles, everyone is just lumped together. If someone is willing to sign someone, they're all lumped together. The only difference is center. Center, I see more of a disparity there. There's a couple guys who make a lot, and then I think there's some teams that just don't value it at all. They see the center as a position that you can just kind of go and pick up in the draft, and those guys are able to kind of come in and compete at it. Right guard might even be the same way a little bit, but you do see a couple more veterans in there. Let's see. Next question. Brandon Cooks on the trade market. Yeah, you know, that's a surprising one. You know, why are the Saints getting rid of all their high-octane players? And it's true. The Saints have looked at this this team as basically being Drew Brees and a bunch of guys. And I think there's some reasonable that could be somewhat reasonable to look at that. You know, you look at Jimmy Graham, they traded him away. Darren Sproles, they got rid of him. Kenny Stills, they got rid of him. I think you could look at that in some kind of logical way that, you know, they figure anyone can work with Drew Brees. Now, maybe part of the reason for this is the fact that they think they can still get a high value for him because he's very productive. He's incredibly young. And you still have him 2 years cheap, so you have a lot of time to determine what you want to do with his contract. But maybe the Saints feel like they don't, because Drew Brees, this is the last year Drew Brees is under contract. Drew Brees cannot be happy with the way things are going in New Orleans. He just can't be. And he's got this monster cap charge if he leaves the team next year. But I don't know if they can necessarily convince him to remain on the team. I just don't know if they can do that, because they're not. They just don't do the things that I think someone would look at and say, you know, this is a team that's really got some kind of vision, some kind of plan. And too often, you know, it just disappears. Now, he has a no franchise tag provision. So if he's going to walk, he's going to walk. So maybe they're looking at this and saying, you know what, we can get some things to begin to restock the shelves if we can get a number one draft pick for this guy. And we can start to rebuild in the post-Drew Brees era. Who knows? Maybe they're not going to trade Brees right now. But if that's the way they're looking at this, that should be their play. You know, what targets make the most sense? See, if I'm the Titans, if I'm the Eagles, I think that's too high. I think even with the 2 years of cost control in there, I don't know. I think those numbers are too high, and I would be afraid a little bit of the production dropping off once he leaves that Saints offense. It's Jimmy Graham was not the same player in Seattle. You know, there are players, there are certain teams where I think you don't want to read too much into the offensive numbers that are put up in certain systems, and that's one of them. I would not look at the skill guys on the Saints and say, okay, well, that's going to translate to some great production here. It might, but I don't think I would look at it that way. I think the Patriots at the end of the first round is much more realistic, or teams at the front end of the second round. But if there is a big market that grows for him and your other option is paying Kenny Stills $12 million, well, I could see a team trading away that first-round pick. Now, there is some cost benefit still to doing that. Remember, actually, I'd have to look at the numbers on that. But remember, when you do draft a player in the first round, you're probably going to give him a pretty hefty signing bonus. I could be off on that number, so I might be wrong. But let's see. If the Titans, for example, since they would be the highest of the picks. Or no, that would be the Eagles, right? They'd be the highest. They'd be paying a $7.5 million signing bonus this year, give or take a little bit. To their player, about 7.4. So Cooks, over the next 2 years, let's see what he earns. Just 7.80 this year, and then next year's tag number. I'm sorry, 1.5 this year, and then next year's tag number is probably going to be like 8 million, something like that. So you'd have 9.5, 10. So it's almost a wash in terms of how much actual money that you would be paying to the player. And you're kind of a given on the talent you're bringing in, even if it's not going to be as high. So I could see the logic in that. You're probably trading away 3 years of low cost, but question mark talent for 2 years of reasonable costs, and there still should be a little bit of question, but certainly no questions that the guy's a professional and he's going to be close to 1,000 yards in your offense, and maybe significantly more than that. If you look at it, that you think his numbers are down because of the three receivers there, and on your team with just two, his numbers will explode. So I can see the logic in teams definitely doing it and giving away those draft picks. I wouldn't want to do there. If I was the Titans or the Eagles, I'd rather drop back if I could and then use that to maybe bring him in. But I guess we'll see how that plays out. It'd be stunning at this point with all those trade rumors if he was still on the Saints. I can't imagine you can shop someone that openly and still bring them back. I don't think that would work out. Contract-wise, if you are looking for him to sign a new contract, as for salary he'd be looking for, I think he may as well wait to see what Jeffrey signs for and then what Stills signs for, because he's worth more than Stills. So I can't imagine that he would agree to any contract extension with another team unless they were going to come in big, big money, $14 million a year or something, without seeing where those other guys come in at. That would be my guess. Steelers rumored to be interested in Drake or Patrick. That seems way above their pay grade. Unless they think his money is going to be way down. Understand the concept of them bringing in another cornerback. I don't think that would be something that they would do. That's never been the way that they've approached free agency. Their free agency approach has always been, sign a guy for $5 million that you can plug in, not a guy who's probably going to be in the 10-plus category. What are the Bengals' free agency plans? I wouldn't think any. I don't think that they'll really do anything. They're usually a very quiet team at free agency. They didn't get their two guys re-signed, their cornerback and their guard, probably because they're asking for too much money, going to get too much money. So they've decided not to keep them. Left tackle's probably going to leave as well. The Bengals, maybe that's good for them. The Bengals with that down year, maybe this is the time where they need to focus on, bringing in some new talent. They do have some other players on the team that can step up. My guess is what you'll do is you might see them moving on a couple extensions, like an Eifert or something like that. You'll also have the possibility of, there's a lot of rumors of trading A.J. McCarron. Rumors are something like a second or third round pick. I can't imagine that, but it's crazy for quarterbacks. When you look at McCarron and you look at Garoppolo, if those players do get traded for big gains, which would be a first rounder, second, and in the case of McCarron, a second or a third, those are both big gains for where the players are drafted. I think that should influence the way that teams begin to approach a lot of things when it comes to these draft picks. One, it means that you should be drafting quarterbacks any round after the second. Now, I'm a big believer in drafting quarterbacks anyway, more so actually in the first round, until you really get one that is going to be good. But if you can get someone and stash them on your roster for a couple of years, and it's not going to cost you that much money, anything second round later is not going to be that kind of money, and you can showcase them in the preseason, and more so than that, you should be showcasing them in lost seasons to say, hey, these guys might be something. Garoppolo played in two games. I don't even remember how many. It's only a couple passes. I think that should change the way that teams approach it. If you are the Jets and you've got this Bryce Petty guy back there or Christian Hackenberg, it maybe made sense to put them in situations where you thought they could do well. I don't know if the Jets really did that last year with Petty. But you put them in a situation where they can do well to increase their trade value. Now, that might not be until the third year that the player is there, because the first year they're a rookie, they're probably going to look like garbage. Second year, they should look a lot better, but maybe there's a couple questions. By the third year, they should be fundamentally good enough to not embarrass themselves. And if you're a team that's doing bad, it makes all the sense in the world to put your guy, your starter, on the bench and play these guys for 2-3 games. And you know what? If they win 2 games, you can probably trade them. Maybe you'll decide that they're your quarterback for the future. But if you can turn a 7 into a 2, man, you know, why wouldn't you do that? Or whatever. I don't even remember when McCarron was first drafted. I'm trying to think of what round. I think I hear my little guy in the background there. You know, but if you can do that, if you can turn a 2 into a 1 or a 3 into a 2 down the line, I think that's a smart play. And what you have to do is go out there in a couple of games and feature some of these guys. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Let's see. Tight end market. I don't know. I don't think the tight end market's any good. You know, Bennett's the top guy. I don't think he's going to make big money. I think there's a lot of questions about him. He'll get paid, you know, but it's not going to be top tier. You know, I would think the most will be in that $7 million range. I don't know if we'll get Olsen's money. Jared Cook, no, he's damaged goods. Let's see. Were you surprised that the salary cap figure was $167 million? A little bit. The last couple of years, the NFL has been conservative. But maybe the conservatism that came out wasn't so much that. It was still just kind of getting used to the ins and outs. Maybe now they're getting a little bit more accurate with the way that they're able to pinpoint these things with their estimates and everything else, since they've got a couple years working in the new CBA now with the system. So maybe they're just a little more accurate. But 167 is pretty good. It's about the same percentage raise that there was in 2015. So I think from this point forward, I think what I'm probably going to do is estimate that the cap will rise probably by about 7 to 7.5% each year. I think that sounds reasonable. Let's see. Here's some questions on the combine. From one of my buddies here. Hey, what's your 40? I have no, well, right now my 40 would be, there'd be no 40. I would die trying to run 40. I'm way too old, overweight to do that. And once I tore the Achilles, running, I don't know, I'm still nervous about the whole running aspect. How much could I bench on the 225? Nowadays, 225, I don't even do the bench that much. I don't go heavy really at all. I don't know, maybe I could do 3 reps at 225. I don't know. When I was younger, I probably could have done about 15 reps, I would think, at that, maybe a little bit more. When I used to work out a lot, I would say I probably could have done that, maybe a little bit more than that. I guess probably depends on how perfect you really need to lock out on all those. Nowadays, maybe 3, and I'd probably blow my elbow out trying to do that. Broad jump, vertical jump. I don't think I have a vertical jump anymore. I think my feet would probably stick to the ground. You know, that was one of those things that disappeared with age, which was too bad. I think I was able to still, hang from a basketball rim probably when I was in my early 30s. Now, I don't even know if I could. I don't think I would even graze the rim. I don't even know if I'd really get off the ground anymore. Broad jump, I haven't done that in years. I used to have a good broad jump, but that was when I was, you know, skinny and athletic, not old and fat. So I don't know what that would be either. But it would not be impressive if we did the the combine in my front yard here. It would not be a very impressive combine. Let's put it that way. It would not increase my draft stock one little bit. That would definitely be the case. Another set of questions here. Let's see. There's a specific reason. This is from Timothy. He sent me a couple here. Is there a specific reason that teams like the Bucks, Jags, Raiders, and Titans don't give out large signing bonuses? Well, the Jaguars have moved into the signing bonus category, so I wouldn't put them in there yet. Titans don't really have a philosophy. It's mainly the other two teams. I think it's primarily a philosophy part of it. There's some strategic aspects to it as well. When you look at players who forfeit because of drug suspensions and things like that, you are much better off having guaranteed P5s than you are giving away signing bonuses. Look at someone like Doug Martin. Imagine if the Buccaneers gave him a $10 million signing bonus rather than the $4 million in salary guarantees versus I think he got a 7 and a 7 in terms of base guarantees, and he voided the second year guarantees. If you give him a signing bonus, yeah, he would have voided a couple weeks of that, but that's it. You know, it would have been 4/17 of 1 year's proration would have been what he would have given up. Versus now, you can argue that he'll give up the whole thing. So I think that's a reason for it. There's also flexibility with it. You should, in theory, unless you really screw up on the players you bring in, which the Buccaneers have in the past, you should be able to field rosters with relatively no dead money in any season. So you do have to pay more for those players, I feel like, when you do that system. But it gives you the chance to kind of build that dead money into the contracts, the existing deals, and kind of deal with it year by year. And you should never have a big total. And I think that only helps you in the long run. It's almost like having a safeguard in place from doing bad things. You know, sometimes there are some teams when they do crazy stuff, you say, you know what? If there was some safeguard that we could have in place that would keep from spending too much money, that would be a good idea. And in some way, it's almost like a self-control mechanism that's built into the deals with the way they do them. What do you recommend the Texans do going forward? Brock Osweiler is a waste. Mega contracts in the future. You see, I think if I'm the Texans, I can't worry about what I'm going to do with the contracts in the future. There are times when a team has to do something, I think, drastic to try and make the most out of what they have. I think the Texans are almost in that position right now. And I know I'm going to be one of those criticizing them if they fall flat on their face and they went out there and they signed a Tony Romo guy. But that's what they have to do. I think the Texans should have moved on from their head coach. I understand that they've done well. The way that that quarterback position has been treated with him there is atrocious, and that's their biggest problem. And I don't know if it gets better with him coaching the team. But I think this is one of those teams where even though the criticism is going to come later, the same way it did with the Matt Schaub deals and everything else, this is a team that has to make risky moves, because if they stay status quo, they're going to be the Bengals, which is that team that just, you know, doesn't advance. And I know they've won a couple games in the playoffs, but they've never gotten anywhere significant. That's what it's going to be. And they're going to waste potential on both sides of the ball if they just go out there status quo and say, well, you know what? We're stuck with Osweiler, and we know we're going to have a lot of money we're going to have to spend on Hopkins and Clowney in the next 2-3 years. So we're going to kind of hold pat and say, this is what we are, and this is what we're going to do. You're too good to have to just, you know, give up like that. I think that's a team that has to take some risk and kind of put your head on the chopping block if it doesn't work out, which could happen. But I think that's a team that needs to find a way to bring in a Tony Romo or someone. They have to get aggressive in some way, shape, or form to bring someone in that can play quarterback. That's a little bit more of a known. And even if it means overpaying for even a guy like, and I know there's no upside to a Josh McCown or anything like that, but even if it's bringing in a guy like a Colin Kaepernick or something like that, you need someone in there that maybe at least gives you some kind of hope, because Osweiler is not going to do it. So I don't think you can stand pat because of that and because of the future. You got to spend to be able to make yourself as good as possible. And if that means getting a more offensive lineman, because let's say you can't find another quarterback, it means getting more offensive linemen, getting a running back to pair with Lamar Miller. They need something in there to make them dynamic on that side of the football. And it's not going to happen if they just sit pat. How do you think the Tony Romo situation plays out? What's appropriate compensation for the Cowboys? Shouldn't Romo take a pay cut? I talked about Romo a little bit before. It's going to depend on the, on how many teams are interested in him. I think at the end of the day, Dallas will end up cutting him unless some kind of rumor from Washington can work out. And as you can hear, my daughter is in the room. Megan, why don't you say hello?
Hi.
So that's Megan. Okay, Megan, why don't you go off? Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, bye, Megan. So, yes, that was her fun. So she's made the microphone. Good job. if I was the Cowboys, you know, I think appropriate compensation given the situation is probably like a fourth or fifth round pick with the possibility to increase based on playing time. Because really, Dallas is not so much in the driver's seat. I mean, you could make a – if you didn't look at the cash aspect of it and the fact that I think Dallas would really be screwing him over by sitting him on the bench, and I don't think they'll do that to him. If you just looked at it that way, I could see making the argument saying, well, you know, it's going to cost us $24 million to cut him and sign a backup if you're just not looking at the lessened burden that it would have on you the following year. I could see the logic in that. Given where they're at right now, I could even see a post-June 1 being used on him. But I don't know. I think unless this Washington rumor can really heighten a lot, I'm not sure if they can trade him. I got to be honest. I think the only team that would trade for him, and I know they've claimed that they wouldn't, but I think would be Denver. See, Denver, much like Houston, I think that's a team that needs to take some risk. It's a little bit easier for Denver to say they shouldn't take risk only because they did win a Super Bowl 2 years ago, so it's not like, you know, as critical. But when you look at the roster and what they've paid for some of that talent, I could see them taking that risk. And the only way I think they would really get that deal that I was talking about, the Manning kind of deal where they get him to bring that salary down to $10 million with incentives for more, I think that's only going to happen in a trade if you bring him at 14. Otherwise, you're running the risk that the market kind of takes over and that the market is not going to be there for him, for one team to go out there and go crazy. Now, the fact that the Texans did spend a lot on Osweiler probably takes them out from going crazy in salary the way that it would have if this was last year, to where, you know, if you were a team like Denver hoping you can get him at between 10 and 14, there's no way that would have happened with Houston, you know, in the mix. But this year they probably are not going to be able to go as high because of their cap situation and everything else. But, you know, I think if the Cowboys could get a 5 or a 4 for him, maybe with a little bit of upside for playing time and stuff, I think the Cowboys should jump on it. But I have a feeling he's probably going to end up being released. And then we'll see what happens. So I think that's everything for me this week. So, you know, give us some feedback on the couple new things that you see on OTC if you get a chance. Just so you know as well, just to make a little bit of a reminder on that, you will see that there is in the little column where we have our little social media icons, there's a new one for technical support. So any issues that you have, feel free to fill out a form on that rather than emailing me direct on it. This will get to the right place sooner that way. Hopefully you guys like that. And remember to check out my book, Crunching Numbers. You can check out, there's a group of new testimonials on crunchingnumbersbook.com, and you can purchase it from Amazon. It's a great little book looking at the salary cap and everything else. So hopefully you guys will check that out. I think Amazon has that on sale right now for, I'm just pulling it up, about $22, and at the Kindle it's $9.99 if you prefer the e-version of the book. So you can check that out. crunchingnumbersbook.com, and you know, got a lot of good reviews, so I would check them out. Check out the praise testimonial pages on the website and read about the book. You can check out the chapters and a little bit of a preview of what's in the book there. So all right, hopefully next week things won't get so busy with free agency and stuff that I should be able to pop online on either a Friday or Saturday night and do another podcast. So get me your questions by next Friday, and I should definitely be able to do them at some point. Last thing, just bear with us during free agency. Like I said, there's probably a chance that the site could go down. You know, it's a possibility that it could disappear for a little bit of time. It'll be in and out, so just, you know, be patient with it, and It certainly within a couple days it'll work out, and bear with us with the contracts. They will come in. We'll get them online as soon as we can. You know, stuff comes in all the time with these contracts, and as we get numbers that come in, we will work through them and try and get stuff on that, you know, to keep everything up to date. So bear with us, and hopefully everything will go smooth and we'll be able to get a bunch of stuff out there. I don't know if we'll really have too many article updates because I think the way the new site is, I'm not going to need to go in there and make a little article that says, hey, this guy signed here, hey, this guy signed there, hey, this one signed there. So hopefully we won't need to do that, but we'll see. Maybe I'll throw a couple on there if I get some time. But just bear with us. You know, sometimes the deals might not make it online till night. Sometimes they might not make it for a couple of days, but they'll be on there. And, you know, have fun with the site. And I'll talk to everyone next week.